It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Pennsylvania's Secretary of Education, Pedro Rivera, says he expects students to return to their classrooms in the fall. But it's up to each district's school board to approve a reopening plan. A-plus Schools is an advocacy group that focuses on equity in Pittsburgh public schools. They've compiled some best practices for the district to consider. Joining us now is Executive Director of A-plus Schools, James Fogarty. James, you describe these recommendations, these considerations, as more than crisis management. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think what we're really hoping for as we come to the fall is what we've seen in districts across the country, right? We were able to interview folks from the League of Innovative Schools, which is a peer-to-peer network of school districts. And what they saw in some of the districts where they were seeing greater success, those schools made a policy of the families being connected to every day, and not just a robocall or an email, but actually someone from the district or the school calling and following up with the family, checking in on them, making sure they have what they need so the child can learn. But also, what's going on at home? Are there things that they need? And this is where us as a community group want to connect schools to other community resources. So whether that's food, additional assistance for rent, or other things that the school system, once they know these things through teachers, can then share that back out with community partners who can help address those needs.
With 23,000 students or so in the Pittsburgh Public Schools, that would take a lot of manpower, wouldn't it, to have that kind of contact?
Not really. I mean, Kevin, we've got about 2,000 teachers and counselors here. So if you think about it, you know, what you're talking about is having those 2,000 people call 10 families, right, on a weekly basis. And making it part of the work of our staff to be able to do that so that families are checked in with. You know, the district called every family when they needed to make sure that they understood what the technology needs were after they'd done the technology survey. I don't see why it's something that can't be done on an ongoing or regular basis for families.
When schools shut down in mid-March, the Pittsburgh School District could not supply all of its students with laptops and tablets to conduct classes online. They've been distributing devices throughout the summer. Your organization advocates for education equity. Are you confident that every student will have one come fall in the event remote learning becomes necessary again?
I actually am. I mean, the district's done a good job partnering with our funding community, with neighborhood allies who should be really commended for the work they've done with the district to make sure that they have enough devices. I think by fall, you know, every child that needs one will have a device. And if you're a family that doesn't have one, and I can say this with a lot of certainty, call the district, call their helpline, make sure that you get you let them know that you don't have what you need, and make sure that they get on it. I think they are working on getting additional devices right now. There's refurbishing happening, and there are efforts across this community to make sure there are enough devices for kids, including one through the Education Partnership and the Bettis Foundation, right? So there are lots of efforts right now to get kids the devices, and Comcast has stepped up and the Housing Authority stepped up to give families access to the internet. There will still, even with the device, even with the internet, there still will be issues, and we're going to need to troubleshoot those. And I think the more that there's a relationship where a family member feels like they can trust and maybe ask the embarrassing question around, you know, the technology, or they might be embarrassed to ask, is going to be helpful, right? So building that relationship is going to take time. And then I think just making sure that, you know, we're protecting those high need students and marginalized groups, right? Like, we're going to see budget cuts probably.
Well, let's talk about that. In late spring, the chief financial officer told the school board the district could face a loss of $82 million in local revenues. Does the district have the financial resources to meet the needs of all students?
You know, I think any district leader would tell you they could always use more. any teacher could tell you they could always use more. But I think we are blessed to be in a position, unlike most urban districts, where we have about $25,000 per pupil. And I think, you know, as that decreases because of budget cuts, I think one of the things that they're going to have to do, there's going to be one kind of a state conversation that needs to happen around pensions. I also think there's a real good conversation that's happening at the state level around some charter reforms that would save dollars. And then I think finally, there needs to be a conversation about how we distribute the dollars within the district right now, such that, you know, those who have the greatest needs aren't, you know, the first to get cut. And then we don't consider sort of across the board cuts. Across the board cuts, all they do is hurt those that have the least the most. Their lives have already been disrupted by this virus, by the economic impacts that are disproportionately, the health and economic impacts that are disproportionately felt by Black and brown families in our community and communities across this country.
James, other states will require students to wear masks throughout the school day. Pennsylvania officials have not yet suggested one way or another. What's your advice?
Wear a mask.
All students?
All students. All day. As long as they're in school. And if with the young ones, I think what we have to really be concerned about how that happens and where it happens and figure it out. But yeah, no, like the evidence is clear that the spread is contained and slowed significantly by the wearing of masks. I don't think we need to be policing it in like a heavy-handed way, but I think there needs to be a way for every family to get comfortable with the idea that their child will be wearing a mask all day if they're going to school.
The recommendations by the district's committees are expected by the end of July. Are you confident that students can safely return to their classrooms in about 7 weeks? And what do you think is going to look like?
So I think there will be some form of school. I think there will also be some form of opt-out for families to take online school. Whether or not that's delivered by your own classroom teacher or teachers from your building that you send your child to, or whether that's done more centrally, remains to be seen. My hope is that there's a prioritization of kids in the early elementary grades who both the parents need the childcare and who need to be in those learning environments for those critical early years. And I expect that we're going to have to see some innovation of the competency-based kind, much like the what we're seeing out of Cleveland. What they're looking at is trying to do more mastery-based curricula, project-based learning, because kids and families are going to have to guide the learning a lot more. And so what we could do is going to be limited based on this pandemic.
James Fogarty is the executive director of A-Plus Schools. Thanks, James.
Hey, you're very welcome, Kevin. Thank you.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Pennsylvania generates the third highest amount of electricity in the nation, but less than 1% comes from solar. That's according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration. The University of Pittsburgh is committing to power part of its campus in Oakland with solar energy. The school says it'll buy all the electricity produced at a solar facility to be built by the company Lendlease on the border of Allegheny and Beaver counties. Aurora Sherrard is the university's director of sustainability. First off, Aurora, despite the economic downturn from the pandemic and the shutdown, this project is still moving forward?
The project is definitely still moving forward. We're actually very excited to help it move forward, even in COVID, and demonstrate that renewables are a cost-effective opportunity, especially locally.
Is that the key, the partnership, a major university and a company? Is that what helps move projects like this forward?
It definitely is. Any organization, a university, a business, a government, signing a long-term power purchase agreement with an entity that is developing renewable power is what can help that project actually move forward into reality.
Pitt has been facing demands from student activists and other groups to divest from fossil fuels. In February, students occupied the Cathedral of Learning. Was this deal driven by that?
No, this is actually part of our overall sustainability plan for the university. 50% reductions in greenhouse gas emissions from our 2008 baseline by 2030. And that includes sourcing 50% of our electricity from renewables by 2030. We also committed to carbon neutral Pittsburgh campus by 2037.
As Pitt's director of sustainability, I guess it, though, did it make you feel good that the students were interested in this and wanting to divest from fossil fuels?
It's really great to see students, both undergraduates and graduates, engaged in local and global carbon discussions, knowing that climate change is really that looming emergency, that it will be there as we emerge from COVID.
We talked earlier on the Confluence with you about another project, and that is the hydropower plant being constructed on the Allegheny River. What's the status of that project?
Rye Development, who's our partner in that and will own that facility, is still moving that project forward. It's anticipated to open in 2023. They have to go through Army Corps of Engineers and other federal regulatory approvals since it is on a river.
So the hydropower plant is low impact. Can you explain what that means?
When a lot of people think hydropower, they think the high wall dams that then flood a large amount of land. Another name for the type of hydropower that we're partnered in at the University of Pittsburgh is run of the river. So you're basically putting a turbine in the river and just benefiting from the natural water flow. And there are all sorts of technologies that ensure that it is minimally invasive to wildlife and in river ecosystems.
These renewable energy projects, are they going to offer experience to engineering students designing, operating?
Not necessarily the hands-on designing and operating, but as part of our partnerships with both Rye Development and Lend Lease, we have the opportunity to visit the site, to collaborate on research, teaching, learning, incorporate both the hydro facility and the solar facility into curriculum experiences for students.
And this is for more than just engineering students, I assume.
Oh, yes, definitely more than engineering students. So any student who's interested in sustainability or energy or just really, you know, renewable energy policy and governmental interaction is a big piece of it.
Aurora, will the Oakland campus continue to need as much electricity as it did before the pandemic? Students maybe enrolling in remote learning, how's it going to be impacted?
That is a really great question, Kevin. And I would say we will not know the answer to that until students start to come back on campus this fall and we see what remote learning and the hybrid flexible strategy that we're taking as a university looks like. I'm interested to see those numbers as well. And we'll see what those outcomes are.
And sometime when we get back to normal, more of that power will be generated naturally.
That is true. And I should also mention that we're continuing our efficiency and conservation efforts as well. So we're working down what we demand across the board, whether it's through electricity, steam, natural gas, and other energy sources.
Aurora Sherard is Director of Sustainability at the University of Pittsburgh. Thanks, Aurora.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Kevin.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Forget fireflies and June bugs. The buzz in Pittsburgh this summer is all about spotted lanternflies. Specimens of the invasive and notoriously destructive insect have been found here over the past few weeks. The Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture put Allegheny and Beaver counties under quarantine for lanternflies earlier this year as the species began migrating across the state. Joe Stavish is Community Education Manager for Tree Pittsburgh. He's in the field right now. Joe, where are you exactly and what are you doing?
Today I'm in Allegheny County's North Park and I'm shooting some educational videos that we put up on our social media page. Today we're going to talk about trees and tree watering because it's been so dry lately.
All right, Joe, let's focus on the spotted lanternfly. Why is it such a threat to plant life here in Pittsburgh?
So this is a new insect new to the western Pennsylvania. This has been in Pennsylvania since 2014, and not a lot of people know about it in the western part of the state. It has the ability to affect not only trees, but a lot of our really important agricultural crops, such as grapes and hops and vegetables.
So why do they attack them? Is they going after sap? What are they going after?
Sure. This is an insect that looks like a moth, but it's actually a plant hopper. And plant hoppers are sap-sucking insects. They basically pierce through the plant, and they begin to drink out the water, the juice that's inside of the plants. And then these things feed in swarms, and what that happens to do to the plant is just deplete all of its resources and eventually dry it out.
And does it look like it sounds? Spotted?
Yeah, so if you look up some images on the internet, they're usually shown with the wings open, but in the normal phase, it's closed. It has these dots all over its wings when it's an adult. Right now, most of the insects probably don't have wings. They're in their nymph stage, which is like their teenager phase. So they haven't turned into the adult form yet. But the nymph, or the small stage that the insect is in right now, is black with white spots. So it looks sort of like a reverse Dalmatian pattern. When they turn into their adult form and they have wings, they're still covered in spots. They just look a little different.
Well, now that we know what to look for, if a homeowner spots one, what should they do?
So we're definitely telling people to go out and look at their plants, especially their trees and really any plants in the landscape. If they see this thing, it's great to take a photo of it to sort of document what they found. And we need to report where these insects are being found in Allegheny County. You can report it to the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture. They have a hotline phone number and a website. Also, we can report it to Penn State. Penn State, our local extension, is kind of taking charge throughout Allegheny County as well.
And what is the plan of attack against the spotted lanternflies?
So right now, Allegheny County is in quarantine phase. And what that means is really just early detection, trying to figure out where is the insect specifically and how large are the populations. The recommendations are once you take a picture, once you document and report it, they want you to smash these things. So they don't want you to just let them go because that can spread the population really quickly. And we're in the early stage of the quarantine now. You know, it might be 1 or 2 years before this thing is everywhere. And if we can really track where it is now and destroy those small populations, that'll help us for the big, you know, for the future.
You mentioned the serious damage that they can do. I understand they leave sticky droppings. Are they toxic? Should we be careful?
Yeah, so as this insect is feeding, it's secreting a waste, which they just call honeydew, because it's really sticky and sugary. And it's not toxic if you, you know, if you breathe that in. What happens, unfortunately, is that that will grow sooty mold. And so all of the stuff that's underneath the trees, whether that be your deck, your patio furniture, your smaller vegetables, your plants, that gets covered with this sticky waste. And then you get mold growing on there. And then that could be a problem for, you know, respiratory issues, for just cleaning your house and keeping it nice.
Finally, Joe, we've been hit by other non-native invasive species before, such as the emerald ash borer, which devastated ash trees in Pennsylvania. Is the spotted lanternfly as big a threat? Bigger? What would you say?
That's a good question. The problem with the trees for emerald ash borer was that it killed all the ash trees, but that was really the only plant affected. And so that population has sort of moved out of our state. With spotted lanternfly, the plant list is over 70 species that this insect could feed on. And so I'd say from that standpoint, this is a much larger threat because of the amount of plant material that this insect can affect, not only trees, but really everything.
Joe Stavish is Community Education Manager for Tree Pittsburgh. Thanks, Joe.
Hey, thanks for having me on, and keep your eyes out if you spot the lanternfly.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. You can find more from this and past episodes of The Confluence online at wesa.fm/confluence and through your favorite podcast app. Thanks to our team, Helen Wigger, Tom Hurley, Joe Yazenkovich, and Doug Shugerts. Until next time, I'm Kevin Gavin. Hope you have a good day of good news.